I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com and the Radio.com app.
Bobby Orr, behind the net to Sanderson, Orr! Bobby Orr! Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like it is sure. Yeah.
With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah, he's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him!
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Hey, Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm a damn dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
All right, welcome into episode 49, I believe, of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, and I want to get the opening thoughts by my colleagues Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. So, guys, what are your initial takes after the last week of hockey?
Well, the Bruins have bounced back nicely after that two-game losing streak where, you know, they had that one horrible game against Buffalo, and then they got shut out by Pittsburgh. And it's been a good week since then. They bounced back with a really good win over Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. And then two straight wins over the Sabres, which, you know, it's the Sabres. Thankfully, the Bruins are finally done with them. We don't have to watch the Sabres anymore. But there were two wins over the Sabres in which they dominated and gave the complete effort that you want to see in that matchup, whereas they've had games against the Sabres this year where they really haven't done that. They've kind of, you know, sort of played down to the competition or had an off night. So for them to, you know, to string together three straight really strong games here, I think certainly helps you feel like that two-game losing streak was just a blip on the radar and not something to be concerned about.
Yeah, and I think something that was talked about a lot post-game after that last Sabres win on Saturday was that the guys are kind of realizing that this works and building confidence with their line. So especially since we're only 11 days removed from the trade deadline, 11 games removed from the trade deadline on April 13th. And the guys had, you know, at this point in the season when you kind of want to know whether or not those moves work and where their best position is to put those guys into. And I think the Bruins are lucky enough to have pretty much found already that the guys are working fine. Hall's great on the second line. You could probably even use better words than great with Krejci and Smith. And I think Lazar is probably the only mainstay on the fourth line going into the playoffs. I'm sure there'll be people moved around him, but he seems to have found his role there. And then Mike Riley, he's been versatile for them. He's been able to give them on the power play. He's been matched with a few different guys on defense, but it seems like he's doing exactly what they want him to do back there. So these few wins have showed them that what we're trying is working, which hopefully gives them confidence heading into the playoff play.
Yeah, I think the trade deadline acquisitions have been huge for them. It's turned into a completely different team. You know, before the deadline, their ceiling wasn't really high, and as far as the postseason goes, I thought that they were probably the fourth best team in the division. And now I feel as though that they can compete with any of the top three teams as well, as it currently sits. So the first and second line have been, you know, doing fantastic. But since their brief two-game losing streak, you know, Bruce Cassidy has been tinkering with the bottom six. And yeah, I've come to the realization, guys, that there are ideal lines that you want. Like, you would want Coyle and DeBrusque on that third line with maybe Richie and maybe Corrali with Lazar and Wagner or Frederick. Like, those are ideal combinations. But what I'm starting to figure out now is you just have to go with what works. And things are always going to change depending on playoff matchups and injuries. So, you know what? You can have the perfect lines all you want, but things are always going to happen. And recently, the lines that Cassidy has gone with, you know, the fourth line, I got to admit, I didn't really see that one coming. Lazar centering DeBrusque and Kuhlman. And then the third line with Richie, Corrali, and Coyle. Coyle on the wing, Corrali at center, has paid dividends. And I like what I've seen out of those two lines for, you know, for different reasons. I want to get your guys' take on those new combinations.
Yeah.
Can I go first?
Sure. Go ahead.
So, like you said, Brian, and I was talking to Scott before this, that DeBrusque kind of forced their hand into making the third line have to get changed up, try Corrali up there, try Coyle on the wing, because DeBrusque wasn't doing what they wanted him to do there. So then you come and you try to factor him in on the fourth line, if you can factor him in at all. So then we end up Wagner needing a rest day. So Saturday, it's instead of Wagner, it's Kuhlman with Lazar and DeBrusque. And I like you, Brian, I liked how they played. I think that it was good to have Kuhlman there instead of Wagner with DeBrusque on that line, because Kuhlman moves his feet. Not that Wagner doesn't, but he's just not as fast. And I think that that line made its identity more as a speed line than kind of like a grinder line. And I think that that worked into their favor. So with DeBrusque, Lazar, and Kuhlman on that line, it kind of has a little bit of a different feel. They're not trying to be another strength line. They're with that look, they're kind of more of a speed line. And I think Kuhlman did a really good job. He kind of got lost in the third period. In the first two periods, he had six shots, which is more than anyone on the team. So he was definitely trying to make the most of his time up. And I thought it worked. And I think we brought this up in a previous podcast where I was wondering, hey, where does Kuhlman factor into this? And we hadn't seen him. It's been a long time. I have to check. But so now I can see a role for him. And it's been 11 games, so 19 days since Kuhlman's played. But I do see that he could end up in the lineup. I'm not sure what they'll do with Wagner, though, in that case.
Yeah, so I think both of you guys have nailed it. And to Brian's point, like, you're at a point in the season now where you can't just put together what, you know, okay, we hope this works, and you just wait and wait and wait and wait. Like, they've tried that. You know, we know they wanted to have Richie, Coyle, DeBrusque as the third line, but it wasn't working. You're at a point in the season now where you got to change it up. And if you find something that looks like it's going to work, that's starting to work, you've got to stick with it, which is why next game I would go right back to the lines they had Saturday. Because Richie, Corrali, Coyle, yeah, it doesn't seem like your ideal third line, especially with Coyle moved over to the wing. Like, ideally, he's your third line center. Ideally, Corrali is your fourth line center.
But so, Scott, it's worked. It's like,
right,
it's
exactly
worked. So, both of those guys hadn't scored in so long. And then next thing you know, the monkey's off their back once you put Corrali up there on the third line center and Coyle at his wing. It just all of a sudden it sparked. Sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, what can Cassidy do to spark the offense? And it's like, we're going to plug here, plug there, plug it. But this one actually worked pretty quickly. So it kind of solved the problem, at least short term, for getting those guys going, because it's been a long time since they've been going. But because of their new positions, with at least Coyle's new position on the wing, he was able to make that play and get that goal.
Yeah, all three of them have scored in the last two games. So you've got to keep going that. And Cassidy has talked about how, you know, at times on and off, really going back to the summer, they've been looking for a big third line. That's kind of the vision he's had in his mind. And if you remember, going into the bubble, they actually tried a line of Richie on the left, Coyle at center, and Corrali on the right, and it didn't work at all. And they've tried different combinations of this big third line a couple times this season that they've gone to, and very mixed results. But right now, you know, so you make that switch of now Corrali's at center and Coyle's on the wing, and it's working for now, so keep going with it. And then to your point about the fourth line, yeah, DeBrusk doesn't strike you as a typical fourth liner. Kuhlman, we didn't know if he was going to have a role. But they had a really good game Saturday. I think, you know, they outshot, when they were on the ice, the Bruins outshot the Sabres 11-4. They had a lot of the puck. They were in the offensive zone. You know, they looked good on the rush.
DeBrusk ran the post.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I would go with that again, too. And, you know, unfortunately for Wagner, like, yeah, he got banged up. You know, he didn't, he was playing, I think, okay before that. But it's good to have competition. And he had to miss a game, and the guys who were in played well. You know, Frederick's the other guy who was out of the lineup Saturday. But he hadn't really, you know, he hasn't had much time back since he came back from being sick. But he didn't really blow me away either. I think he had a little bit of jump, you know, that one game. But, so, you know, DeBrusk draws that game, gets his chance, and I think played well. I don't think he was the best player on that line by any means. So that's one place where I could still see a switch. And, you know, I think if we want to get into DeBrusk and what we think of him, like, this time he gets sat down again as a healthy scratch, and this time it's for two games. And he comes back and plays well, but I feel like we're at a point now with DeBrusk where it's he doesn't have a guaranteed spot in the lineup, and they're not planning around him anymore. They're not, you know, going out of their way to try to figure out how to get him going. Now it's either you get in and contribute or you don't. And if you don't, someone else probably is. So we'll sit you.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I just think that's where they are with him now. It's he's one of these guys who, if he's playing well, yeah, he'll stay in the lineup. If he's not, I don't think they're going to hesitate to take him out.
DeBrusk is at a, you know, you can sit there and think to yourself, maybe he's tuning out the coach. Maybe he just, you know, doesn't really respond well to this coaching staff. But then you could think to yourself, well, all right, but do you not respond well to Patrice Bergeron and Kevin Miller and Brad Marchand when your teammates pull you aside and kind of echo the coaching staff's words and advice? So I don't know. It might just be a situation where they may have to try to get some value for him in the offseason. But yeah, like he comes back into the lineup and, you know, I don't want to, you know, be too negative on him. I do think he you know, had improved effort. I think, like I always talk about, effort should be guaranteed. So I don't really want to sing praises for somebody working hard. But, you know, he did improve his effort. I did like Kuhlman on that line. He, you know, he was moving his feet. He brought the puck hard to the net. And Lazar, you know, so that line to me, like we talked about, not traditional, but speed kills. And I do think that if all three of those guys are playing their game, and if DeBrusk can kind of relish, you know, being in more of a fourth line role and can take that on, you know, I never envisioned him as a fourth liner. I don't think any of us did. But if he, you know, if he understands the role he has to play and plays it well, then that line could be effective. And like I talked about, depending on the matchup, maybe you put a Frederick in, who I you know, was hoping more from in his return to the lineup. Maybe you put in a Wagner for a spark here and there if you're down in a series. Like, if you're playing the Capitals or the Islanders and it's going to be a big boy game, maybe you insert one of those guys. But if you're playing the Penguins, then, you know, I kind of like the idea of Kuhlman in there and DeBrusk and Lazar's line. And like you guys mentioned, that third line of Coyle, Richie, and Corrali, they're a big line. Right. So, like, you know, if you need to match them up against another team's fourth line for size purposes or what have it, you can do that. So there is some flexibility. I do like the fact that Coyle has been able to, you know, find his offensive confidence again. I do think that by alleviating him from some of his responsibilities down low in the defensive zone as a centerman allows him to jump into the rush more. And Corrali is certainly a reliable centerman as well. So I think having Richie and Coyle on his wings gives Corrali some more offense around him, as you saw last game.
I just wanted to get through the tone that I picked up from Cassidy about DeBrusk. You can just tell, not only from what he's saying, but how he's saying it, that he's the role for DeBrusk is fourth line or not in the lineup at all, from what I was hearing with Cassidy the past week. And just to read one thing, he seemed pretty frustrated with him, and he said Jake's been out on a lot of lines. He's been given an opportunity with almost every center iceman. I've said it before, to me, it's the second effort league, and if he's willing to do that, he'll have success in this league. But then he also said this week, we just want him to be grateful for his spot in the lineup. Just help us win, Jake. Get out there and play to your strengths, and we'll coach you up on the things that you need to get better on. Just be one of the 20 wins. So to me, the thing that stands out there is just that he needs to be grateful for the spot, like not take it for granted anymore. Basically, they're not plugging him in. They could take him or leave him is kind of what it sounded like Cassidy was saying. And hopefully that motivates him a little bit because he's got to be concerned now that he's moved, you know, from all lines, nothing's working. They can't find anywhere that makes him work. Now it's kind of like, okay, it wasn't the chemistry. Maybe it's Jake. So
you'll like this. I was at the station yesterday, for the Bruins game. Cause I had to produce the Sox afterwards. And I was watching the game with Nick LaPan, and shout out Nick, one of our fellow producers, colleagues.
I think I shouted him out on another show before.
Did you? Good. Well, he's getting.
Yeah. But he and I can't watch the Bruins together. We'll kill each other.
Yeah. So
he doesn't. He thinks Krejci sucks, and I totally disagree.
So we're watching the game, and there was a play behind the net where DeBrusque, it was kind of a loose puck behind the net, and the opposing defenseman, I forget who it was for Buffalo, probably something Antonin, all those Finnish guys, who knows. And DeBrusque thought the guy was going to make contact with them, so DeBrusque kind of backed off and just gave up on the play. And it's like, you know, Jake, not for nothing, bud, but you were out of the lineup. You were healthy scratch two games in a row for reasons like this. And, you know, I preface it by saying his effort was better. He did hit the crossbar. He did go to the blue paint a few times. Probably have to go to Home Depot afterwards for some more blue paint. But, you know, then there's plays like that where it's just like, dude, you can't just let up there. You can't just give up on a play because you never see your teammates do that. And if they do, then they'll be out of the lineup too. So I do think it is more on Jake.
Yeah, and I also found it interesting after the game, when Cassie was asked about the fourth line and how, you know, the fact that they played well was pretty good. And he was asked about DeBrusque specifically, like, you know, do you think that'll get DeBrusque going, kind of playing this straight line game? And he's basically like, well, yeah, like that's what we've been asking him to do. And then Cassidy quickly pivoted to Kuhlman and like praised him. And I sort of interpreted that as like Cassidy wanted to sort of make it clear without directly saying it that he thought Kuhlman really did what he needed to do and that there was maybe still something missing a little bit from DeBrusque's game. So that's going to be interesting to watch going forward. I think, like we said, like DeBrusque, even after a solid game, solid enough game, his spot's not guaranteed. I think he'll be back in there Monday night. We'll see. But yeah, he's going to have to prove it every night. He's not going to get the benefit of, oh, you have one-off game, you know, we'll keep going back to you. Like, Wagner's going to be pushing to get back in the lineup. Frederick's pushing. They have options. They're not relying on him. He's not in a big role. So either he takes the job and runs with it and earns a spot on a nightly basis, or he doesn't. He hasn't done it this season, so it's entirely up to him at this point.
Yeah. Bridget, do you have any closing thoughts on that before we move on to the defense?
No, I think, yeah, let's move on to the defense.
Okay, so, yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I believe Brandon Carlo is set to return to the lineup next game against New Jersey. If not, then the game after. So that kind of begs the question, you know, what pairings will Bruce Cassidy elect to start with? What would you guys like to see him maybe? And, again, it's all trial and error, so we'll see how they work out. Grizzlick and McAvoy have been together a lot in the top pair, but it seems to me, and you guys as well, that Cassidy is really opening up to the idea of having one puck mover per pairing. So let's just, you know, dive into that a little bit. What do you guys expect to see, and what would you like to see?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the one puck mover. Cassidy had hinted at that. I think we're already seeing that. Saturday, it was Lozon and McAvoy together, and Grizzlick goes with Miller. And then it was Riley Clifton. So I think right there, you got your preview of how Cashley envisions it, where Carlo's going to go in for Clifton. It's going to be Riley and Carlo. And then he's going to give it a shot with the Lozon McAvoy pairing again and Grizzly Miller, because he wants that balance of one puck mover on each pairing. And then he can always go to Grizzly McAvoy if he needs to in a game, if it looks like that's going to be the better option. Personally, I think Grizzly McAvoy has been so dominant together that I don't think I would split it up. But saying that,
a
third pairing of Lozon Miller, they haven't been good when they've been together. The two of them together have struggled, and we know why. Like, they're not very mobile. They struggle to get going in transition when they're together. So I get why he's doing it, and it may very well be the best option. But there's no question that Lozon McAvoy as a top pairing is not as good as Grizzly McAvoy.
But the reason why Cassidy is splitting up Grizzly and McAvoy is not they're not doing well together. It's to cover up the blemishes on the other line. So to make up for some of the shortcomings of some of the other guys, Lozon, this is his first season. He has kind of needed McAvoy on his side to get the best performance out of him. So I like that decision to put McAvoy and Lozon back together. Think about it. There's been nights where Lozon's mistakes are so glaringly obvious, and then when he's with McAvoy, you don't see those happening. He plays better. He plays up to McAvoy a little bit more, and I think it's safer. It's a much safer bet. Obviously, if you want to go with the firepower, girls like McAvoy, that's scary. But then you leave, other times when you're on the ice with guys who aren't going to – it's just going to leave other matchups that are more easy to expose later on in the defensive pair. So I like the defense pairs that he came out with last game with McAvoy and Lozon together, rather, and then with Grizzly and Miller and Riley, and probably will be Carlo when he comes back. So
I agree with everything you guys said. And, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Grizzly and Miller have played together in the past. There should be some familiarity there. What's interesting is the Carlo.
Yeah, they played together on the third pairing when Grizzly first came up.
Yeah, I thought that sounded familiar. An interesting pairing for me, because we have seen McAvoy and Lozon. And Bridget, you're bang on when you say that Lozon, plays up to, he plays up when he's with Charlie. He elevates his game because he has to. We've talked in the past about how maybe he's not ready for that top pairing minutes. But as Scott, mentioned, he and Kevin Miller hadn't really been clicking like I had hoped they would as a third pairing. The Carlo-Riley pairing to me is very interesting because they're going to play together for the first time. And we're talking, a handful of games before playoffs. But one thing I do like about that pairing is their reach. Their ability to cover ice. They're both tall, lengthy kids. Carlo, obviously, more so. But they, they can both skate. Riley's obviously more of the puck mover, but they both are, rangy and lengthy and have long sticks. And so I really like their ability to disrupt plays at the Bruins blue line. And then as far as Lozon and McAvoy go, I think that you could, if you're Bruce Cassidy, you can always, put Grizzly with McAvoy situationally, or somebody with McAvoy situationally, if you need to do it, in a big moment of the game where you need a goal, maybe put them together, McAvoy and Grizzly. Maybe you really need to keep the puck out of your net for a shift, and Lozon's not playing well. Maybe you throw a Carlo and a McAvoy together for a shift. Who knows? Like you can work around it. Things always change in the course of a game. So I too like the idea of those pairings. So it should be fun to see. And I think that the Bruins are a pretty well-rounded team. So Bridget, you're kind of up against it for timing because I'm an idiot, and I had a schedule for noon today. And of all people, I was the one that ended up having to be a few minutes behind. So you have about 10 minutes or so left. I wanted to make sure we get to anything you wanted to get to before you have to take off.
Okay. So I guess what I was going to head into next was on the same vein with the defense, and ask you guys a question, because it's been rotated So Grizzlick, obviously most of the year, first line, power play unit, quarterback. Then they come up, they pick up Riley. Riley has some success there. Now we've seen him kind of go back and forth. I guess I'll start with you, Brian. Do you think Riley finds his way onto the power play, or do you think it's just going to be Grizzlick on one unit, McAvoy on the other unit?
So Scott probably knows my thoughts from editing the blog yesterday. One of the things I mentioned was how the top unit's still struggling, and you know there's two schools of thought. Number one, if you're Bruce Cassidy and you're sitting there saying, look, we have enough talent for two really good top units or really good power play units, and I want to allocate, you know, a minute or so to each unit on a power play, assuming you don't score. I understand, you know, the idea of spreading people out. However, I'm of the mind, like, your top unit needs to have your best players. And I understand that, you know, everybody and their mother wants Grizzlick to be that quarterback because of, you know, similarities to Torrey Krug. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the fact of the matter is Charlie McAvoy is your best offensive defenseman. I mean, the points will tell you that. And he's been doing so without, you know, premier top unit minutes on the PP. So I know I've been singing it all year long, but I'm going to keep doing it until something's done about it. I think that adding McAvoy and Taylor Hall to that top unit, first of all, it should, in theory, solve a massive issue at the top unit, which is zone entries. We know how well of a skater McAvoy is, and we know how great a zone entry as Taylor Hall is. To me, that's massive. Add them onto the power play. I think that McAvoy should be there, not Riley. I think Riley and Grizzlick would be great in the second unit together, and then, you know, when somebody's coming out of the box, there you go. So those are my two cents.
Can I play devil's advocate a little bit?
Please do, yeah.
Can I play devil's advocate to that a little bit? So I agree with you that the first line power play is missing somebody who's going to be able to do the zone entries better and set that up in the zone. But I also think that the reason why McAvoy's on the second unit and the reason why they're not pulling Hall off the second unit or Krejci or anyone off the second unit is because I think he actually sees that unit as probably maybe even the more dangerous unit right now, because last game he came out, first power play, you see the traditional first power play unit with Grizzlick, Marchand, Pasta, Bergeron, and Richie. But then they have success with the second unit when they came on. So then the next power play, they start with the so-called second unit of McAvoy, Hoyle, Hall, Krejci, and Smith. So they come out with that line, and that line's been so dominant in the past few games that I could see why they keep the five of them together as a unit, but maybe they are the ones starting.
So here's a fun thing I was going to say, a little trivia to lead into a point I'm going to make. Who do you think has been on the ice for the most power play goals on the Bruins this season?
David Krejci.
Correct.
That was going
to
be my guess.
So to me, I'm kind of feeling like whatever unit David Krejci is on, I'm giving at least half the power play to. So, yeah, if right now that's the quote-unquote second unit, then see it. Like, I agree with Britt. Like, they've looked more effective the last couple games. So now you're left with, to Brian's point, like that dilemma of, okay, are you splitting the power play and saying we basically have two number one units that we're going to roll out there and they're going to get almost even time and we're not going to worry about, you know, whichever one's fresher is the one that starts the power play, essentially. You can do that, or you load up on one unit. But, you know, the problem with that is, how do you load up? Like, is it moving?
Not splitting them up. The best thing they can do is not split that unit up. So loading them, no, just leave them alone. Leave that second unit as constituted alone.
Yeah, because I was saying last week, you know, I wanted Hall ahead of Richie on the top unit. I wanted to make that switch. But then you see this last week play out where there isn't as clear of a one and two, and it's more of a, you know, two 1As basically. And it's like, okay, well, now I kind of see what Cassie's going for. And I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know if you want to roll through the whole playoffs like that, where it's splitting time and you don't have like a clear number one unit. We've seen the Bruins in the past have a lot of success with one lethal top unit that that plays like a minute and a half on the power play.
But so say Scott, they've already solved the top power play unit. Some teams have already figured out the formula that goes with Pastrnak, Bergeron, Marchand, and Richie out front. They know what they're looking to do. So with the second unit, I feel like they haven't figured that unit out as much yet. So yeah, give them time. Make someone figure it out before you change it up. Because so far, I think it's been so successful. You roll with it until it doesn't work anymore. But so far, no one's been able to really figure out how to defend it. But that's probably mostly because Krejci just can find anyone.
Well, anywhere. But I would say...
And also McAvoy, he has that nice little drift play where they find him crashing the net sometimes. He, like Brian and I were talking about, not on the podcast, McAvoy is perfectly fine not quarterbacking the power play and letting Krejci do it and just drifting and moving. He can constantly move throughout the zone when he's on that unit. So there's so many reasons for me to just leave that second power play unit.
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones who have scored the last two goals. There was two games ago, it was Krejci from McAvoy and Smith. And then Saturday, it was Smith from Krejci and Hall. So
I guess the question, Scott, is like, in Bridget, like, this is all well and good, right? But this is all assuming that the first unit figures it out. Because, like, you can't have Pastrnak and Bergeron and Marchand struggling in the playoffs in the power play unit. You just can't have it. Like, you're going to need these guys to score. And so, you know, this, the whole, you know, put McAvoy and Hall into the top unit for me really becomes pressing if, you know, we're in the playoffs with the current units as they are and that top unit's still not scoring, which is fine because the second unit can score. But, you know, how long will that last before teams figure them out? So I personally think that by, like, putting Grizzlick and Riley or something like that on the second unit, I don't know if you really, mess with that mojo all too much. I think Krejci's the key on that unit. So I don't know. It's just something to think about. The top unit's been struggling so much to score goals. I just know how important that they're going to become playoffs. And if they're not scoring on the power play in the playoffs – their confidence might go down, even strength. They might start to, fight the puck too much, and you don't want that. You want them feeling good, which they look good 5-on-5. But like I said, the other thing too that I wrote about was, perhaps they just waited out, like you guys have been kind of been talking about, and see if the current top unit can figure it out. I don't want to, go on too long and take up time, but it's interesting to see how it plays out. I really just have a hard time watching the top unit struggle so much, but seeing Hall and McAvoy on the second unit, and I know how much they could help out, and I get that the second unit's doing well, but, like, if they're going to be the second unit, then they might not always get that much time on a power play. It's really depending on if Cassidy evens out the time.
One final thought for me on this, and then I'm going to have to leave.
Ooh.
What you're seeing is that they're going to have to try to fix the top unit, but it's kind of like the DeBrusk conversation we had a little bit. Like, we're trying to do things to fix them when really the only people that can fix them is them. They're probably the best players on the team. They're some of the best players in the league. If they can't figure out how to beat other teams on the power play, nothing's going to help that. They need a puck-carrying defenseman up there. Honestly, it shouldn't matter whether or not it's Grizzlick or Riley or McAvoy. Those guys need to figure it out. I don't think there's much you can add into that top power play unit right now. And with the risk of ruining the chemistry and the production that's happened on the second unit, you gotta just let them figure it out. Because I don't know if there's really much you can do. They're already, top players in the league. They should be able to figure it out. And I wouldn't want to touch the second unit to try to get them going. They'll get going. They just need to, I don't know what they need to do. They just need to figure it out on their own. And they will break through. But I don't see that they need to move Hall to the top line.
Yeah, and maybe Hall on the top line would mess with their chemistry and give them too many options, and they'd start overthinking even more. So it's a good point, Bridget.
All right. I got to hit the road, guys, but thanks for having me. You guys can keep talking if you want.
All right. Hey, Bridget.
Thanks, Bridget.
Bye.
Scott, don't trash talk her now that she's gone. What are you doing? No, that's a good – she brings up a good point. She's right. Like, these guys are all world athletes. And furthermore, they're some of the best players in the world at hockey. And if they can't fucking – oh, I'll just take that for now.
It's a podcast. It's all right.
If they have to, if they need McAvoy as opposed to Grizzly or Riley to get themselves going, you know, that is on them a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, she makes up a good point.
Yeah, I think, and as far as like it affecting their confidence, if we're talking about the key guys there, I feel like Marshawn and Bergeron are professional enough and good enough to where that's not a concern. Like, they're going to bring it no matter what. Like, I don't think they let their play on one unit affect their play on any other unit. Like, in the past, even if they've struggled a little bit 5-on-5, which doesn't happen often, they still kill penalties really well. Like, they're still good in the power play. So, not worried about them. Pasternak, maybe a little. I think he's the player who I think relies more on scoring goals to kind of get his confidence going. And, you know, doesn't have that all-around game that Bergeron and Marchand have where they're just going to keep doing their thing no matter what's happening in terms of goals. So there could be some concern there. But, you know, like we said, they've been playing good 5-on-5. Maybe this would even be something that would get them more 5-on-5 shifts if they're not relying on them as much on the power play. So, you know, I just think along the lines of what we're talking about with DeBrusque, it's at this point in the year, you can't really have a ton of patience in terms of just like waiting, you know, hoping for things to turn a corner. You kind of just have to go with what's working. And those guys are going to have to take it upon themselves. And, you know, hey, look, maybe it'll be good for them. Maybe they'll, you know, be fired up by some competition if they start to see the quote unquote second unit getting equal time or maybe even more time on the power play. Maybe they'll be like, whoa, you know, hey, that's usually us. Let's kick it up a notch. So I guess that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. You're right about Pasta. That's kind of what happens when you're, you know, a would-be 50-goal scorer if it was a full season last year. You know, if you're not scoring at that same rate, you know, maybe the confidence isn't there. But going into the year, his offensive numbers weren't going to be at the very top of the league because he was going to miss 2.5 weeks plus. So, yeah, he just needs to, you know, simplify his game. And I think that, you know, a key on the power play in at 5-on-5 is just a shot mentality. And, you know, especially in the power play, you start shooting early. The penalty killers get out of the box. They're scrambling. You have good puck pursuit, and then those passing lanes naturally open up, and you're no longer forcing them. And I think I saw that against Buffalo. There was like one shift where it looked like Pasta's, you know, rifled off like 5 slap shots in a row at the top of the circle. So I think he's, you know, focusing on shooting a little bit more. And yeah, I think they'll be fine. It's a good problem to have, right? I mean, overall the power play has been struggling. It's been like, you know, they're like 1 or 2 for the last 20 plus attempts, but the offense is starting to come around. It kind of reminds me of a parallel on a team as well with the goaltending situation. You have Rask, you have Swayman. Both are playing great. Obviously, like the top unit, you would like Rask to be that guy because, you know, he's been there and done it. But now you have this this young goaltender, Swayman, i.e. the second power play unit, that's kind of forcing their way in there. So, look, the Bruins have depth that they didn't have a month ago prior to the deadline. And I remember, like, Scott, like 4 episodes ago, we were talking about, I think I asked you and Bridget if you guys had seen Jeremy Swayman before, because it was when they brought up Vladder, and you guys were like, I don't know if we've seen him, but he's, you know, supposed to be the next guy, and here we are a month later, and he looks to be that. So did we want to get in a question or two from the listeners before we take off? Was there one question about Stanika or something?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we've touched on a lot of stuff, but one question we got in that is unrelated to anything we've discussed is about Jack Stanika. You know, which is a good topic to bring up because we've seen all this shuffling around on the 3rd and 4th lines, and he's still been down in Providence. So at least the question of, like, where is Stanika? Is he in the picture at all? What happened? You know, what does the future hold? Where does he eventually fit? So I guess it's worth reviewing just when Stanika got sent down to Providence earlier this season, he then unfortunately suffered an injury that kept him out for, I think, a few weeks. And he's been back now for the last few weeks, almost a month now. But he hasn't really been producing in Providence. He has played 9 games down there. He has 4 assists. He hasn't scored a goal. And unfortunately, Fortunately, it kind of seems like this turned into a bit of a lost season for Jackson Miga, which is really disappointing when you consider where it started, where he's pushing for a regular role right off the bat to start the season. You know, he's playing on the second line. At times he got some time as the fourth line center. And it seemed like he was really pushing for regular playing time. And then, unfortunately, like around the mid-season point, he's basically just hit one setback after another. And I can't see him having a role at the NHL level this season at this point. You know, unless it was something like last year where you ended up down so many forwards due to injuries in the playoffs, and maybe he finishes the season strong in Providence, but it seems like he's pretty far down the depth chart now, and they're going to have to they just have to get his game back at the AHL level, playing there, and then I think just regroup this offseason, you know, get him on a plan. I think he's going to have to bulk up. That's been the one problem he's had when he's been up with Boston is he gets bumped off pucks too easily. He's a smaller guy. And you can be smaller and be strong in the puck. You see it with Brad Marchand. So Stanika's going to have to learn some of that. Some of it will be physical strength. Some of it will just be learning how to shield himself from defenders, use leverage, spin off guys. So he'll have to get better at that. But I think, you know, really there's just going to be a regrouping that's going to happen this offseason with Stanika, and he'll get a fresh start going into next year. We'll be better for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think going into the season, you know, the Bruins brass kind of were hoping to do something along the lines of what they did with Tyler Seguin back in like 2011, when he was 18, where he's a natural centerman, but we're going to kind of groom him on the wing, get him some NHL reps. Not that Stanika is the prospect that Seguin was at second overall, certainly not. But that concept of, you know, we don't think you're ready two way yet to play your natural position, but we think you're ready to be in the NHL and start gaining those reps. And, you know, he got off to a decent start. Like he showed some flashes in the bubble last year. Early this year, he looked decent at times. I think actually he was the one to break the Bruins even strength goal slump to start the season. That was like 9 periods or something like that, or 6 periods. And then, you know, Lake Tahoe, he had a great, you know, smooth, creative assist to Pasta for his hat trick goal. So he's shown flashes. But like you said, some things have snowballed and he's kind of found himself out of the mix a little bit here. And he's certainly not going to find himself in the mix as a center right now with Bergeron and Krejci and Coyle / Corrali and Lazar. So, you know, the hope going into it was like, you know, groom him as a wing. And then maybe Krejci's gone next year. He slides up and starts to play some more center. But if Krejci and Taylor Hall are the new Gretzky and Messier, like who knows what they're gonna do in the offseason with them? So the jury's still out on Stanika. He's young still. You know, personally, I don't know if he's gonna be a dynamic number. I don't think he's gonna be a number one center. I don't even know if he's gonna be a number two center. We'll see. He definitely has some skill. But usually when you see a prospect that really has something, some next-level stuff, it kind of jumps off the page, especially, you know, when they get their first few looks in the league. Even if it's not consistent, you'll see flashes. And, you know, I'm not sure if Stanika's that guy. He might be, you know, along with John Beecher, you know, and Stanika. Those are some of their blue-chip center prospects, you know, post Bergeron and Krejci, which is an era I don't want to think about, and it's an era I don't think they're ready for, Scott. And it's something that they're going to have to address going forward in future drafts, which they now can because they didn't have to give up a first-rounder to improve their team this year. And that was one of the biggest things about this trade deadline is that they made their team better now, as we're seeing. They're a much different team. Everybody's falling into place, and they didn't really mortgage their future, so... So that's why, you know, for all the crap that Don Sweeney gets from others, you know, and myself sometimes with drafting and developing specifically, and some, you know, bad free agent moves, he did okay this year at the deadline, but he really needs to step up in the future when it comes to replacing Bergerons and Krejcis and filling that pipeline with not potential NHLers, Scott, like bona fide, going to be impact NHLers. And it's going to be challenging when you're not one of the worst teams getting one of the top picks. So it's a conversation for another day. You know, kind of just jumped ahead there, but it just kind of came to mind when somebody asks about Stanika is, Sweeney's drafting and developing ability. And that's kind of, Stanika's the working project, so we'll see. So that's what I would say about Stanika. Jerry's out. Tough luck for him this year. He'll get his chance, though, at some point, unless they, traded him for something, which I don't think they'll do. I think that's probably it, Scott, right? We don't want to ramble too long without Bridget. And, we have a lot to, I don't want to spoil anything for next week, the week after, because it's going to get good. We have the playoffs coming up, so we'll be talking about playoff matchups and potential matchups, who you'd rather face, who's a harder matchup. And there's so much to shake out. The top three teams in the East Division have clinched. The Bruins will be shortly thereafter them, and then they're all right next to each other. So it's all going to shake out, the points and stuff like that. And we'll dive into all that going forward. Did you have a closing thought, Scott, on the second line or the first line? Or did you want to save it for a rainy day? It's up to you.
No, I think we covered pretty much everything. I'm good.
Okay, great. And then so Scott was so kind to set up an email for the Skate Pod. Should we plug that, Scott, in case anybody needs to reach out to the show for any reason or another?
Yeah, definitely. Any feedback, questions, anything, skatepod@wei.com. You can send anything there, and we'll take a look. And, if you have questions, then obviously we'd love to get to them on the podcast. So, you can send them there or send them to us on Twitter, @theskatepod. We check both. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.